Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. From high atop the ice surface at the MTS Center, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve post-game playoff podcast. It was a night 19 years in the making since the last Winnipeg Jets home playoff game. The crowd was electric. The atmosphere was electric. Unfortunately for the Winnipeg Jets, a fantastic game, but they fall just one goal shy, losing 5-4 in overtime to the Anaheim Ducks. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock here as we'll go goal by goal through this game. And Richard, before we get to the game itself, talk about the atmosphere here at MTS Center and the electricity you could feel in the building.
Well, incredible. I mean, I arrived to the arena, Drew, and about an hour 15 before the game started, kind of walked through the concourse, took it all in, and came upstairs here. And just an amazing environment, amazing on the streets, colder not. And I kind of thought that was fitting. It was kind of snowing, flurries, and a little cold out. And you get inside, and everybody's just ready to go. Warm up was as if the game was starting. It was as if the puck was going to drop, not warm up. And, it reminded me of 1996 Mile House playoff game in Detroit, Winnipeg, game 3. And the atmosphere similar there, people chanting, go Jets, go, warm up. And just amazing, and so much excitement. Everybody who was in the arena was just so happy to be here, including us. So, certainly including us. And it was a fantastic environment, fantastic fan performance. And regardless of the fact that the team didn't win, it was, if you spent whatever amount of money you spent today, it could have been $100, could have been $500, whatever you spent, could have been nothing. You certainly got every penny's worth tonight. It was just an incredible game.
Absolutely. The final result was almost secondary to being here in the atmosphere and everything else. And it truly was one of the best games we've seen in years. I mean, this might be the best game we've seen in 4 years of watching this team. I'm trying to think back to other great games, and there were certainly other seminal moments, but this was a seminal moment and a great hockey game.
You're right, Drew. It was back and forth. I mean, just the way the ebbs and flows of the game over time, late period goals, turns of momentum down to an up, and blowing leads. You have every emotion, and isn't that what you want out of a game? If you rewatch a game, of course you want your team to win if you're a Jets fan, or if you're a Ducks fan, of course. But if you're not a fan of either of those teams, how amazing is the back and forth nature of this game and the physicality and the passion? And they still haven't necessarily got the hate on that you might have expected they would, but boy, they're trading some chances tonight, and it makes for a fun game.
Absolutely, it does. The Jets opened the scoring at the 9:38 mark of the first period. Lee Stempniak gets his first of the playoffs, assist to Adam Lowry and Jacob Trouba. Trouba with the secondary assist on this one, but he really was the one who started the play that led to the goal.
Skated the puck real well through the neutral zone. Drew created space, came in on a 2-on-2 with Adam Lowry, put the puck on net. The puck kind of pops off a leg to Adam Lowry, who spins around, makes a pass to Lee Stempniak, who's supposed to be covered by Matt Beleski. And Matt Beleski lost his guy in coverage. Kind of a broken play, but Stempniak in the right place. And, you like to see the offseason edition, of course, of Stempniak. But in reality, it's Lowry, Trouba, your youngsters, coming through with a lot of pressure on them in a big game. And it's a 1-0 lead, and the place was going bonkers.
Yeah, it certainly was going bonkers. It started off crazy, like you said, in warm-up, and it only continued after that goal. Unfortunately for Jets, or the Winnipeg Jets and their fans, the scourge of the Jets all season long has been giving up late goals in the period. And Cam Fowler got another one. This was with 7 seconds left in the first period. He gets his first of the playoffs, assist to Andrew Cogliano and Jakob Silverberg.
Well, a couple of things here, Drew. You have Wheeler and Buffon, to me, going after the same guy on the boards, and Andrew Cogliano, and allowing Fowler, as a defenseman, to be in deep without unimpeded, really. And the only guy back was Trouba. Now it should be noted, Trouba and Buffon, both right side guys, so one of them's playing in an unfamiliar situation. And I realize that it is an unfamiliar situation, and that it is a 4-on-4 situation, which is why they're playing together. Even so, Scheifele blows the zone. The forward's kind of cheating there. 7 seconds left. You take care of your own business there. Don't need two guys after one. Stay in between the player and the goaltender. Make them fire a shot. I mean, they're not going to be able to generate anything off the cycle with that little time left. And the puck just squirts out. Cogliano played a great game. Gets the puck into Fowler, who comes out, has a lot of space. Good skater, especially for his size. Comes in, and Trouba is trying to kind of cover the weak side as well. You can't blame him here. And Fowler puts a nice low shot past Pavlik, and it's 1-1, and you take the momentum away. And, Paul Maurice got to hate those goals. Just got situation. Buffon's got to know the situation. He's a defenseman there. Him and Wheeler, their intentions are good, but they need to be smarter, and especially Buffon there needs to be smarter. Buffon to me, was a bit out of control tonight. Didn't necessarily have his emotions in check. Took a stupid penalty, which we'll talk about. And I just thought it was one of his poorer games of the year. Again, trying hard. The intention is there. I mean, he cares and he wants to play. So, you know, play well so badly. But Anaheim getting under his skin, and he just a lot of mistakes from Big Buff tonight.
Anaheim would have been happy to have had the first period end with them only being down 1-0. Instead, they're tied up at one goal apiece. And you sort of felt that the emotional sag that the Fowler goal impacted on the crowd carried over into the second period as Corey Perry scores at the 3:08 mark to give the Ducks a 2-1 lead, assist to Hampus Lindholm and Francois Beauchemin. We'll talk about the goal, and then we'll talk about the extracurriculars right afterwards. You met with involving Dustin Byfuglien.
Well, Drew, you know, Byfuglien loses Perry in coverage here, so it's not his shining moment, and he takes it on Perry after the goal, and he, you know, hucks him down and gets a penalty, and then luckily the Jets kill that penalty off, and we'll talk about that, because that was, I thought, that gained momentum for the team, and then they came back and scored. But, you know, Perry, right place, always the right place. He's a tremendous player. You might hate him. You might think he's easy to hate. And they had the Katy Perry chant tonight, which I thought was hilarious. But jokes aside, I mean, the guy's a tremendous hockey player. And it was funny. I was watching the game. I was thinking to myself, you know, the environment here is insane. It is crazy. But this guy's played overtime, Olympics 2010, Stanley Cup Final, Ottawa Senators, U.S.-Canada semifinals last year in Sochi. So this moment, up 2-0 in Winnipeg. Well, the atmosphere is crazy, and the intensity is here is as high as you'll see in you know, for the Jets. Corey Perry's been in bigger games, and he played a calm game. Him and Ryan Getzlaf played a very controlled game, and Perry, the right spot here. The puck actually is shot from the point and pops over to Lindholm, who makes a smart play to Perry. The puck's in the back of the net, and the Ducks had a nice cycle off this play, to start the play. And I thought the Ducks cycle was extremely impressive tonight, and it really is. They're a great cycle team. Down 2-1 and then a terrible penalty. So you put yourself on the brink there. Good thing for Byfuglien that his teammates love him. And I think if you watch that penalty kill, they had a little bit extra there being like, okay, we got to cover for our guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly right. After the goal by Perry, Byfuglien sort of came and, you know, people were saying, oh, it's a Dale Hunter all over again. I mean, it's not get carried away. I mean, it wasn't Dale Hunter on Pierre Turgeon here. He knocked Perry over and he took a stupid penalty. And like you said, the Jets killed it off. And after they killed it off, you mentioned the momentum changed a little bit, and the reason, the penalty actually ended before the 2 minutes were up because the Ducks took a too many men on the ice penalty. Yeah. And at the 6:40 mark, while the Jets were on the power play, Tyler Myers gets his first of the playoffs, unassisted, a point shot here that sort of had eyes and found the back of the net.
Yeah, did it hit Dupre? I thought it did on the way in.
It looked like it may have tipped off of somebody, but in any event, the goal was given to Tyler Myers.
Yeah, I know. Frolich was screening, and it was a great screen. He really, it's one of those, you don't get an assist, but you deserve one. And I thought he might have tipped it, and then I thought it went off Dupre. In any event, as you mentioned, Drew, Myers keeps it in, simple puck play, put the puck on net, nothing too sexy about this one, and it's 2-0, power play goal. And, I don't think the Jets really, at times maybe at that power play at the end of the game, they were overcomplicating it, but I don't think there was a problem with that. Like, I thought they played fairly, actually, if anything, probably played too simple, but this was a nice simple play that went in.
Yeah, exactly right. And the Jets tied it up at that point in time. And then 3 minutes later, just under 3 minutes later, at the 9:37 mark of the second period, Blake Wheeler gets his first goal of the playoffs, assist to Drew Stafford and Toby Enstrom on this one, and sort of follow the bouncing puck, and it ends up right on Blake Wheeler's stick.
Well, yeah, you just said it, Drew, follow the bouncing puck, and you know, there's a coverage problem there. I think Raquel got a little bit lost there for Anaheim. Odd part of this play was that the back referee calls a no goal immediately after, and I'm watching him thinking, what's he talking about, no goal? And then they just dropped the puck, and it was odd. But, you know, Wheeler comes in on his, you know, on his off wing. That's a shot that's a lot easier when you're on your off wing. Mm-hmm. And his celebration, I thought it was kind of a broken play, as you mentioned, but the celebration was just like it really was for him. And then Jets fully have the momentum there, or you're thinking, you know, I might just crank it up here and take over, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen as right, because the Anaheim Ducks, I think it's safe to say that after three games in the series, people were underestimating the Anaheim Ducks and how good they truly are.
Yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, and the Ducks bounce back very quickly. Jakob Silverberg, who's been an absolute force in this series, at the 16:04 mark of the second period, gets his second of the playoffs, assist to Ryan Kesler on this one. It starts with a turnover behind the Jets' net, and it ends in trouble. It ends with a puck in the back of the Jets' net.
Yeah, even string goal, Drew. Party misses a puck, and then Stafford misses Kesler, and then Kessler's able to get it out to Silverberg, and the puck's in the back, and then mistakes. Probably preventable mistakes. You know, the Kesler line tonight, we'll talk about matchups. I want to talk to you about matchups at the end of this because it's very important, I thought, and really interesting because I think home ice advantage is so much more important than people think at times in terms of the matchups and dictating those. But Silverberg, as you mentioned, was very impressive tonight. And the Party Buffon combo, I think they're both on the ice for that one too, right?
Yeah.
Was not a pretty one, and I would assume they're going to be switching that up for game four.
Yeah, Jets again, though, their stick-to-itiveness, they bounce back at the 18-18 mark. The goal came at 18-18 and was scored by number 18, Brian Little, with his first of the playoffs. It's an unassisted goal, and it's Cam Fowler with just an atrocious turnover.
Yeah, you know, Cam Fowler, left side boards, fires it up the middle right to Brian Little on his off wing, tees it up, big-time slapper, top blocker, boom, you know. And Anderson, I mean, it's a perfect shot. I thought Anderson played a solid game, actually, and you know, four goals, but still, I thought he played a solid game. Beautiful shot by Little. I mean, for a guy who maybe had trouble shooting, some have said, and some have alluded to that being a problem, but Fowler, just awful giveaway, and you saw how mad he was after the goal. He goes to the net, and he breaks a stick on the post, rightfully so. It wasn't his best game, I didn't think, but still, very solid player, but Jets get the momentum again, right? 4-3 going into the third period, and everybody made the comment up when we were talking. Another one-goal lead going to the third period. Can't blow the third one, can they?
Well, they obviously could. It was actually, I think I saw a stat at the end of the game that teams that were trailing by one goal entering the third period in the NHL this year ended up winning the game 15% of the time.
Well, I'm pretty sure the stat was, and I believe the stat's accurate, the Jets only lost two games all year when they were up after two periods, and they've lost three games in a row when up after two periods.
Well, my point being sort of the Ducks' ability to come back all season was well documented. They actually won 35% of their games when trailing after two periods.
And that speaks to veteran, you know, comfort in situations that are mostly uncomfortable for others, and that's down a goal, knowing they're good enough to come back, not panicking. All those things play a factor, because you never saw a panic from the Ducks in this series. And they were going, and, you know, as we mentioned, we're down in the third period of each one. Like, they never thought, oh, they're coming. They stayed consistent, rolled their lines. You know, Boudreaux put the blender out for some of the lines at the last, for the last period. You know, making sure Kesler and Getzlaff are taking big draws, not playing Tim Jackman at all. I thought the right moves. I thought Boudreaux, who's a coach, at times I've questioned in terms of the motivation of the squad and different things like that. I thought he played a real nice matchup game tonight. Gotta give him credit. You know, it was really Maurice dictated the matchups, and we'll talk about that. But when I mean matchups more so, I mean, you know, there's only so much you can do on the road unless you're Randy Carlyle. But Boudreaux really was mishmashing the lines at the end, I thought, pretty effectively, getting the right guys out when they needed to be. And even his fourth line in overtime, which we'll talk about, had a really effective line when he gave him a shot and Jackman hadn't played in a long time. So nice job by Bruce Boudreaux tonight.
So after 40 minutes, the Jets do lead by a 4-3 score, and that's the way the score stays up until the 17:46 mark of the third period. Like you said, you're wondering if the Jets were going to give up yet another one-goal lead. And the guy who was the target of Jets fans from the start of warm-up with Kesler sucks chance gives it back to the fans here at MTS Center, getting his first of the series, assist to Silverberg and Cogliano, and it's 4-all.
Well, I mean, is there anybody else you'd want to score this goal less than Ryan Kesler?
probably not for Jets fans, though.
And, you know, Drew, we talked about Andrew Cogliano, off the top, and boy, did he get in on the forecheck here against a tired Jets group, and he created an opportunity by getting in quick and forcing a turnover. The coverage itself, Enstrom and Trouba are out together. I believe it was Enstrom and Trouba, who aren't a normal pair.
That's right.
And they're not only a normal pair, but they get flipped on the wrong side. So you got Enstrom in front, who I thought took his guy, Trouba on the left side, again, not a familiar position for him. Stepniak doesn't get low on Kessler, which he needs to on the weak side as a weak side forward. And Adam Lowry was a little bit all over the place on this goal, too. So it's not like one person specifically to blame, but a bit of a mess. And I thought real nice job by Silverberg. Gets the puck over to Kessler. And Silverberg was a hell of a pass, but Silverberg played a hell of a game, Drew.
I think we're seeing Jakob Silverberg's coming out party. I mean, he was a former first-round pick of the Ottawa Senators, who was traded to Anaheim in the Bobby Ryan deal. And we're really seeing him, I think, blossom into a real, real good player for this Anaheim Ducks team.
Yeah, I know. Bobby Ryan's apparently injured and hasn't been doing much in Ottawa. But Silverberg and Nick Ritchie, they took with the first round pick last year. That's a nice return. And you know, as a quick aside, Nick Ritchie is a big 6'3", 250-pound guy. Fits the blueprint here, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Like a big team. And Silverberg's not that big of a guy. Playing hard, smart, created opportunities, shoots the puck nice. I thought he played a hell of a game, you know, and Ryan Kessler, I thought, came to play today, but Silverberg really drove the line more than anybody. And, you know, you're exactly right. He sets a goal up here, and again, you know, Cogliano isn't the guy who always plays with those guys. See, that's what I mean by the mishmashing of the lines. You saw different combinations. He relies on his horses and the guys he trusts, and I thought Bruce Boudreau put guys in situations to succeed, and they succeeded tonight.
Let's take this opportunity before we talk about overtime to, you mentioned line matching and how important it is, because, you know, I think you're going to talk about Adam Lowry and matching up against Ryan Kessler.
Adam Lowry, Drew, played all but three shifts tonight against Ryan Kessler. All but three. Think about that.
Yeah.
Okay? And if you want to go, just if you want to know what the coaching matchups were, Adam Lowry against Ryan Kessler all night. You know, Kessler was, I thought, still effective. And interesting that they did it. Now, take a step back and say, okay, what were the matchups in Anaheim? Well, they wanted Kessler out against Scheifele. So what that tells me is not as much as they want Lowry out against Kessler to check him, which is, I mean, that is obviously a factor, but they want to get Scheifele away from Kessler. And they did that tonight. Scheifele played every shift but two against non-Kessler lines. So I thought that was interesting. Played the majority of his line game either against Raquel's line, Ricard Raquel, or Getzlaff's line. More so Raquel. So they're trying to take advantage of the Ducks' third line. But again, Cogliano's played us in that third line and had a hell of a game. Brian Little played the majority of his shifts against Ryan Getzlaff. And I don't think they really particularly care, the Ducks, who Getzlaff plays against. But he played the majority of his shifts against Brian Little. And the majority of the defensive matchups for the Jets against Getzlaff was Enstrom and Myers, with Bufflin and Stewart playing the second most. So interesting that they moved Trouba and Stewart away from the Getzlaff pairing. Trouba and Stewart played a majority of their shifts against Kessler. So interesting, some of those matchups. I understand the rationale behind them, but I thought they were interesting, to say the least. If you're looking at other line matchups, Drew, you had Slater's line got out against basically third or fourth line, which you'd expect. That, you know, they played a bit. I know the totals were
minutes, I think.
Yeah, and so I mean that's all right. It's, you know, it wasn't a long overtime period here. And I thought Adam Lowry did a nice job against Ryan Kessler, but that wasn't as if that Kessler line didn't get on the board. Do you want to talk about other matchups? Bufflin and Party played against Kessler and Getzlaff's line quite a bit, but they had trouble tonight. So if you're looking at matchups, religious matchup today Lowry on Kessler. And just every time Kessler got off the bench, Lowry came. There were times they had face-off plays and things like that. But aside from that, you saw Getzlaff's line get a steady diet of Myers, as I just mentioned, Myers and Enstrom, a shift or two against Trouba, Stewart, and then Bufflin and Party. They also played, Getzlaff's line played a bit against Scheifele and had one try out there against a Slater line. I believe that was on an icing. So those are the matchups you saw. I don't think you'll really see a change in those matchups, Drew, in the next game, but time will tell. But they were certainly different than the first two games, and that's why, quickly, you talk about home ice advantage. Well, it's huge. Look at the matchups. Totally different.
Paul Maurice is able to get the matchups he wants, and that's obviously what we saw him do today. Before we get to the overtime period, the Jets had a great opportunity to win it in regulation with a minute 49 to play. Sammy Vatanen, puck over glass penalty. Brian Little rings one off the crossbar. Jets had some good opportunities, good control on the power play, and just couldn't beat Frederik Andersen when it came to getting that crucial final goal in the last minutes of the game.
Yeah, you talk about stats, but I mean, Pavlik, what great save on Silverberg on the breakaway we didn't talk about. He had some
earlier in the game.
Yeah, I thought he had some nice saves, Pavlik. So, I mean, you're going to blame goalies all you want. Anderson, too, saw the puck real well, I thought. And the power play there had its chances, got some pucks through, but he saw the puck well. And, I didn't have a huge issue with the Jets' power play there. Just weren't able to capitalize. And then you go into overtime, and Jets got outchanced in overtime. I mean, there was. You want to get into overtime?
Yeah, let's get into overtime. The Jets did have a couple opportunities. They probably had the power play to start overtime, 12 seconds only, so not a very long power play.
I want to talk about that because they started the Lowry line, so they didn't even consider it a power play.
Right.
Lowry, Perreault, and Stemniak played, and that to me, I thought it was actually. This certainly wasn't the difference maker at all, but I thought it was interesting that they would even acknowledge basically the power play and say, oh, we're going to go with our checking line against Kessler here. Because Vatanen is a forward, as a defenseman who had come out as a forward, which he did eventually. So you'd wonder why they wouldn't put out Scheifele or Little line to try and get pressure immediately and create offense. I thought that was a poor decision, frankly, but not a game-costing decision. Just I thought it was a weird one.
Yeah,
because it leads more to defense than forward, right? Like, don't you want to score?
Yeah, you have a man advantage.
But even so, I mean, I just thought that was weird.
Yeah, the Jets had a couple opportunities during the overtime. Yeah, the Ducks controlled it for the most part, and then Ricard Raquel at the 5:12 mark of overtime.
Quickly, Drew. The Ducks get their fourth line out, and Emerson Needham has two golden chances. Yeah. I don't know how he missed them. But the Ducks fourth line. I know they're out against a tired Jets line there, but the Ducks fourth line can't get. Jackman hadn't played in about a period. Mm-hmm. They got two or three golden chances. Corey Perry had a chance that he'll score 9 out of 10 times, and that was the one time he didn't score it. The Jets came back right after that and got some sustained pressure, got some opportunities. Not as quality as the opportunities that the Ducks got, and I thought chances for the course of the game, based on what I took down, were essentially even at 5-on-5. So it was kind of a coin flip in that respect. The Jets come back into their zone, and it's actually an interesting play in that Bolesky, from his own blue line, kind of flips the puck up to Silverberg because of the pressure the Jets had. And Silverberg wants to make sure his line mates get off for a change. But he takes the puck down into the corner and he kind of gets hit, but he protects the puck and there's a change. Mm-hmm. And then, boom, here comes Andrew Cogliano zooming in. And he pressures Mark Scheifele, ends up winning the battle with better skater than Scheifele, wins the battle. The puck pops up to Boschman. From Cogliano makes a pass to Boschman at the top of the blue line. The Ducks converge on the net, which every team does in the playoffs, converge on the net, and Boschman puts the puck on net, and Raquel makes a hell of a tip. I didn't see whose guy Raquel was, and I wasn't kind of mayhem here. I didn't see whose guy Raquel was, but a beautiful tip. He's a skilled player. Not your fastest guy, but he's skilled. And that's kind of their team. Maybe not the fastest, but they're skilled. And I thought Andrew Cogliano here really deserved a ton of credit for getting in on the forecheck, creating the opportunity.
He's the fast guy on the team. He's one of the fast guys on the team.
And it's what you utilize. Exactly. And it's what you, how do you utilize that? And he gets in on the forecheck, and he comes up and just in a tired group, get the puck in, work him over, and tough loss, for the Jets. And you really only have yourself to blame when you blow three second intermission leads in a series in your own three. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a maturation process and all that, but a lot of these guys, Drew, one thing I want to say about that, a lot of these guys have been to the playoffs. So I don't want to hear, young this, young that. I mean, I know they're a young team overall, age-wise, but a lot of guys in this team, Wheeler and Ladd and Bufflin, they've all played in the playoffs before. You got to be able to clamp down. And when they're playing well, they're able to. And give the Ducks credit. I mean, they push and they push. And I think they continue to push. They don't really, they don't change too much. They come on in the third and they've turned it up a little bit. But I don't think it's been terrible periods before that for them. Like, they've stayed pretty consistent. So, in terms of not having awful periods. And it's a tough one, and now down 3-0. You just try and take your one at home and
get the first ever playoff win for the franchise.
Right. Well, first for this, since '96. But Drew, this is one thing I want to point out here, and this is an obvious statement, but I think it needs to be made. The Ducks don't really care. I mean, obviously they want to win early because it's good to win early. Granted, the Kings went to 21 games to get out of the Western Conference last year, mm-hmm. but you get early, you get a big rest. If they don't, they're still going home anyways.
Yeah.
it's game five that they would be like, I don't want to go back to Winnipeg. So this is, I mean, it's still Wednesday. You'd think the Jets would be able to take one in the series.
Sure, I hear what you're saying there, and that they got to fly regardless, whether win or lose. It's, you don't want to fly back to Winnipeg for a game six. You know, this has been a physical series. Tonight was no different. Entering into overtime, they had 99 total hits accounted for after overtime. 105 hits total between the two teams. Jets credited with 61. The Ducks credited with 44. Andrew Ladd leading all Winnipeg Jets players with 12 credited hits tonight. Look at time on ice, not really significant. You know, the highest number is Tyler Myers, 26 minutes 12 seconds. So Paul Maurice was really rolling, you know, rolling all of his forwards, even the fourth line. You know, still played over 7.5 minutes. Yuri Tlusti, 7:33. He was the lowest of all the forwards in the course of the game. Jim Slater, 11:04, obviously with his penalty killing time factored in. It was a hell of a game. It was a hell of a night here at MTS Center. It's, you know, I don't even know what time it is. I think it's after midnight at this point. Yeah, it's 12:15 at this point. It started about, you know, 6 hours ago in tremendous atmosphere. The sort of game where you feel like you're privileged to be in a part of it, little part of it up here in the press box. And we'll see what game four is like on Wednesday evening. There's audio from both the Jets and the Ducks dressing room. That's on illegalcurve.com. Programming note, NHL midweek Thursday this week. We'll either be...
Hopefully it's not a postmortem.
We'll either be previewing a game five or we'll be doing a postmortem of the Jets and the Ducks series. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. This has been the Illegal Curve postgame podcast.